Today on Think Underground, I continue my mental expedition into speaking with people who in some form or fashion are just way beyond my pay grade and intellectual caliber. Those who challenge the status quo and pave the way for tomorrow's new normal. My guest today is Jacob Amaral, computer scientist, developer, analyst, and we'll have an opportunity to discuss the world of artificial intelligence and quantitative trading. Jacob, welcome underground.
Arif, thank you. That intro was pretty epic, I got to say. And thanks for having me, and thanks for this opportunity.
This is Think Underground. Insightful and intelligent conversation with entrepreneurial giants, impact leaders, and titans. Coming up next on Think Underground.
I always love sharing quantitative trading and anything about trading perspective, because I feel like there's a lack of transparency, especially with what it takes to be successful, the pros and cons of trading, and using computers to make better trading systems.
And with that, folks, you've heard everything from Jacob. I think we wrapped it all up right there. Have a great day. See you later. No, but you
let's head out.
I mean, isn't that that's like a great description in terms of the fact that it has for so long, decades, generations, been a very uneven or unlevel playing field. And you are, I'm going to use the word out there that is often overplayed as a hashtag, and that's a disruptor, right? But I think in some cases, in some circumstances, it's actually well-earned and warranted. So I'm looking forward to the next few minutes with you, but maybe start off by giving us a little bit of background on how you landed on this as being your purpose. And by the way, I'm just going to throw it out there. It wasn't an easy decision, I have to suggest, to give up the comforts of everything else that was an opportunity for you to put food on the table, roof over your head, and you've decided to make this your mission. So give us a little bit of insight into how you got to where you are.
Absolutely. So I did go to college for computer science, but I didn't have a finance background. I didn't do any trading at all in college. And when I graduated, you know, I got the typical 9-to-5 job as a software developer, and I was happy and whatnot. And over time, actually what sparked the main interest was two things. Number one, my boss's brother was in a hedge fund, or he ran a hedge fund. And he would come to the office sometimes and we would chat, and I'd learn some of the stuff they do, like managing portfolios, risk management, that sort of stuff. And number two, around that time, a lot of brokerages, trading brokerages, released what's called APIs, which allows you to submit trades automatically, and it was getting more and more popular. So big brokerages like Interactive Brokers and TD were allowing people to make trades through computers, right? So it was kind of like a new technology. And every day, when I come home after work, I would research these APIs and test them and start building my own trading systems. And then I started making YouTube videos as well on how to code them. And, you know, making YouTube videos, I'd also watch other YouTubers, and there's lots of, you know, algorithmic and quantitative traders on YouTube. So that's sort of what sparked my interest. And then I actually started an online education company with a partner of mine who was a YouTuber as well. And that was more focused on education, but we also kind of bridged in quantitative trading education into that. And that's sort of how I got started. And then, you know, just kept making more content, more educational content online and on YouTube. And eventually I was able to connect with some investors, and now we're kind of running our own family office fund, if you will, and we're trying to expand that. So that's sort of the short form of how I got into it. But I really had to bridge computer science with finance. I didn't have the finance background and trading background, so it was tough for me at first to learn how to build good trading systems, how to build good portfolios, how to reduce volatility in your account, and all that sort of stuff. And more and more soft skills like, you know, finding investors, raising money, making sure they're happy. So it's a lot of skills into one, but that's, you know, in a nutshell, how I got started.
So I am a fan of poking the bear a little bit. So I'm going to do that throughout this next few minutes of our conversation, because, listen, I'm in a really enjoyable and enviable position of not being the smartest guy in the room, most rooms that I walk into, but my goal has always been, you know, how can I make this understandable, digestible, palatable, if you will, for everyday people? And I'm going to also poke the bear by, you know, perhaps the audience, towards the audience, and saying, listen, you know, it's really easy to spend the bulk of our lives complaining about how unfair life is and how it must be nice to be, you know, on the other side, how the 1% lives, et cetera. And at some point, I firmly believe that we each have our own responsibility or obligation towards ourselves to do something about it. And you know, instead of just complain about it, what are we going to do about it? And it sounds to me like you gave up a bit of comfort and you went down a path that said, I'm going to see where this path goes and see what I can figure out. I know your story to the degree that I know for the last several years, you've been in really a beta mode where you were testing this upon yourself to make it work and not really risk other people's money, but risk your own. Mm-hmm. To get to a point where you can share this with a group, a clientele. But, you know, instead of just complaining about it, you decided to do something about it. And that's not overly common. It's just way easier to complain and to not do anything about it. But so there's me poking the bear to anybody who's listening. It's like, here's a guy that's done something about it. Maybe you're going to be able to jump on. Jacob, what's your YouTube channel, just so everyone can know?
It's my name, just Jacob Amaral, Amaral.
Perfect. And we'll see what we can do about that when somebody who knows how to do that does it for us. So, but there's that. So people can learn from you. I have seen your channel. I have watched some of your videos. You make it very plain English. I mean, there's a language in there that's not plain English, but you make it deliverable and palatable to someone like me. You know, let me put things into perspective from my background, if I will, and I kind of alluded to the fact before we got on here. I've had a couple of exposures to the world of trading. I'm not a trader. I'm not a day trader. I have some trades being done apparently for me by someone else. You may know them. But here's the thing that I learned along the way. When I was in a different industry, and that industry had an opportunity through organized labor and union and pension funds and benefits funds, et cetera, for me to make contributions to it. There was, of course, a portfolio manager that I didn't select. It was the union selected them for us. And we got to sit down and meet with them. And this is going back a number of decades, actually. But that one experience was really quite fascinating because when I had this opportunity to meet with a guy in a suit, and it was a one-on-one meeting, and it was really nice, and I won't tell you what the company was because it's kind of irrelevant. It's a little bit status quo from what the general population's expectation or experience is with people in this field. They basically said to me, people like you who work in your field typically direct us to put their money in this type of a portfolio. And we like to do a healthy cross-section of aggressive, you know, sort of balanced and safe and secure. And you should go invest in these companies. And this is what we're telling you to do. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Thanks very much. And I was working in the film industry at the time, and this is back in the 90s. And there was this company called Kodak around at one point and a couple other companies. And they were like, so, you know, guys in the film industry like you, in brackets, who don't know anything about anything, they typically invest in Kodak. And I was like, all right, thanks very much for that. Now, we're in the mid-90s. The digital camera has now been introduced. It's out of most people's price range. It wasn't at Best Buy for $9.99, where everybody suddenly became a professional photographer as a side hustle. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is very indicative of sort of first mover advantage versus general normalization in general population after that first 5%, right? And I'm thinking to myself, something's not feeling right. We're going into an era of digital and Kodak still producing film and the Polaroid and whatever. And I see what's happening in the industry and shift and change. And you're telling me to go do that. And I don't know if I'm comfortable with this. So my natural question came out of my mouth was like, okay, that's really great, Mr. Initials, you know, your company name. I just have one question for you. Where are you investing your money? And his response after about 3 seconds, he didn't put too much energy into it, was, oh, well, because I work for this company and I'm not in your union, we actually invest our money somewhere else through a different fund that's set up specifically for us.
Wow. That's a good question. I like that you asked him that because you really, challenged him. You know, a lot of, you know, portfolio managers get kickbacks for selling some securities depending on where they work. So that was a really good question. I think you caught him off guard.
Well, and it was really telling, because it was all I needed to know. And I interpreted it as, you don't get to invest your money where I invest my money. You're not part of the club. Yeah. And I just stood up and said, thanks. I got everything I need to know. It's nice meeting you. See you later. And I didn't invest my money there. And, you know, and then fast forward a few years, or not even a few years, and we know what happened to Kodak. And so perhaps I saved myself there, and that was luck. That was just dumb luck by being a bit of a smart ass and asking that question. Good question. I appreciate that. But, you know, So fast forward a decade, and I had another opportunity to meet with somebody, and it was just after the big sort of demise in 2008 and 2009. And you've got all of these, again, big brand, global brands that we all know out there, managing billion-dollar portfolios. And there's a blue bank in one of the big six banks that has an investment side of it that we may know in Canada. And I had an opportunity to meet with a really, really good guy, really nice guy. And it was fascinating to watch his attitude towards investing. And he was very straightforward about it. And this is not a slight on him. This is actually, I appreciate what he said. And he said, you know, when we look at portfolios and managing and our performance and how the world is going, et cetera, especially when there's this big crash that's happening and a real reckoning in terms of, you know, personal as well as corporate financial portfolios, et cetera. And he said, you know, historically you'd get these like glossy term sheets and booklets that are all fancy looking, and they show sort of the trajectory of their portfolio and how well they've done. And of course, there's the fine print that says, you know, other people's performance is not indicative of what you're going to get in your performance, and which is a good statement to make, obviously, in there. But there's the marketing side of the whole thing. And they said, you know, we're watching what's happening in the market today. And today, all of our competitors and peers, the big selling point today, which used to be, look at how much money we've made you, is now going to look at how much money we didn't lose you. Mm-hmm. And that was indicative of their performance. And again, I thought to myself, okay, but there's this thing called short selling, and there's this, you know, there's all sorts of things. So yes, we can work in the comfort of portfolio, but who... all these data analysts who should have been forecasting the performance of the market, looking at all of the different contributing factors and indicators to make a judgment call on my behalf to not only preservation of capital, but which I would appreciate, but there's an opportunity for performance. So fast forward another decade, and here you and I are talking about this, and you put some thought into this, and I know you have algorithms and calculations that you take into consideration. Am I out to lunch, or tell me about the average person and how we, without a scientific background, can participate in some form of an equitable fashion and have access to information and knowledge and good guidance on how we should be taking an interest in our own portfolios?
Great question. So just going back to the 2008 event you were talking about, you know, they, in that specific scenario, it depends on the regulations as well. Like that firm may have not been able to short sell because they're not regulated to do that. So a lot of, you know, firms are long only, which means they only bet that stocks go up, and either they'll participate, they'll enter into positions, or they'll just stay in cash. So that could have been the reason why. And that's why he kind of shifted his focus, or whoever the manager was, shifted their focus to saying, hey, this is how much we saved you, because, you know, they didn't have opportunities to, or they weren't regulated to short sell or maybe purchase other securities. But yeah, as far as the average person to, you know, right now there is more opportunity than ever to find edge, to find opportunities to make money with trading. And that could be in any market. It could be in stocks, bonds, futures, which is what I trade, options, whatever it may be. But there's so much opportunity, and that's because of one simple reason, and that's, you know, the internet, right? The internet has a bunch of, it's allowed us to, you know, really tap in and get any information we want in seconds, right? So we can find a lot of information on trading opportunities and trading strategies that we may be able to implement with our own portfolios. Now, with what I do in quantitative trading, where basically I'm telling computers to buy or sell on the public markets, a lot of brokerages, which is where you trade, it's where you put your money in and buy and sell, they allow you to do that through coding, right? And that's another recent opportunity that, you know, I'd say around maybe 2013, 2014 has gotten really popular, where these brokerages are allowing people to write code to place trades instead of having to download their app and, you know, click and stuff like that. Some, you know, you can't automate that, but with code you can. And they've been able to do that with great documentation as well. With that being said, they want you to trade more because they get their commissions, obviously. But the average person can, you know, find edge with their own portfolio and build their own portfolio instead of having to go to the traditional route of some financial advisor. Only if you want to, of course. Some people may not want to. It depends on your passion, right? Some people don't want to do that and they just want to let someone else manage their money, which is totally okay. But from me, like personally for me, you know, I want to be able to outperform normal portfolios and be the best at what I do. So I want to have full control of everything, of all my portfolios and trading. And, you know, you could just follow my simple steps of, you know, going online and watching YouTubers, looking at other algorithmic traders, watching their videos, learning how they build trading strategies and portfolios, finding online courses, which has been super helpful for me as well. And within months, I was able to get to a point where I had my own portfolio. I wasn't doing too well, but I was able to take my knowledge and build automated trading systems. It did help that I did have a computer science background for sure. Like I knew how to code and stuff like that already, but I didn't have the finance background. It can be tougher if you don't have both either. If you have no finance or trading background and a computer science background, because now you're going to have to learn. Now you have to learn how to code first and the computer science terminology and iteration. And then you have to, after that, learn how to build great portfolios in the finance background. So that can take you a lot of time. But once again, with the internet and all the documentation we have online, you know, we have like more information. I heard a quote the other day. It was like, we have more information than the president had in 1980 at our fingertips because of the internet. So if you really want to build great trading systems and outperform most fund managers and index, I think everyone has the opportunity to. You're just going to have to put in the time to get to that point. And also lastly, with all the financial instruments that we have access to now, futures, stocks, options, crypto, foreign exchange, we can trade anything and really build diversified portfolios with all these instruments that we can trade. And there's just so much opportunity to find edge and find alpha with those different types of instruments.
So let me throw this out there. You've dropped a number of bombs actually, which are quite phenomenal. And I want to touch on a couple of them. One, access to information is out there. And it is. I was going to ask you the question of, you know, how much of a computer science background or a coding background do I need to know? Give me just, you know, someone might think, why are you asking this question? But I'm going to ask it anyway. The shortest example or the shortest definition, if you can, of what code really means. What's code?
Code is computer instructions.
Okay. Yeah. So you talked earlier about an Excel spreadsheet, for example. And really these are formula, right? Formulae. Yep. So it's if this, then that. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Okay. So code's a big scary word for some, but really it's taking the time to understand some of the basic principles and then to what? Bottle them, record them in a pattern that says if this, then that while I'm sleeping.
Correct. Yeah. It's you're building out the instructions, right? And you're going to have different conditions for those instructions to do stuff. Like you said, if this, then do that. And you want to test them to make sure they are doing what you want it to do, because the computer is only as smart as what you tell it to do. So it's sort of first you got to build the code, build the instructions, what you think in your head, and then you got to test it to make sure it works and you're getting the right results that you want. Those are sort of the two basic phases. There's also a pre-phase of knowing how to, or knowing what we call syntax, but knowing what the language is and the words you have to write. And usually it will tell you, hey, this is wrong, this is right, you need to change it to this. So first you have to know what to write, what words to write. Then number two is you actually have to code it. And then number three, you have to test it to make sure it works what you want it to do.
Great. So when I was young and looking younger and looking into this for myself, I actually set myself up with a television. I had an interesting position where I had, you know, six screens with multiple cameras recording soap operas. I had CNBC Squawk Box and Jim Cramer and watching day traders and the ticker going by. And I was like, Well, I'm here for 8 hours. Maybe I can learn through a little bit of osmosis while I'm still doing my work. But I also set myself up with some monopoly money scenarios. And I started watching those patterns. So I know you're testing it, et cetera. My version with little pieces of paper, not code, was testing it really on if I gave myself $1,000 to work with and I followed the information that I was listening, didn't make any trades at first, just did it all hypothetical. And then I started applying my monopoly money trades to see how I was tracking. That was my version of testing for myself. And how do you put that into today's scenario for somebody who is thinking about, okay, you know what? You know, we talk about a number of different portfolios or opportunities towards retirement. Because why would I trade? There's wealth and there's cash flow, but there's also when I'm beyond my working years, how am I going to sustain my lifestyle? I'm not part of organized labor. I'm not working for the government. I don't have a pension fund or anything like that. How can I do something for myself? Many people look at real estate, and real estate typically has a great track record. Even today with the market downturn, even if you're losing 15%, you were up 500% before losing 15%.
Especially in Canada, right? Canada real estate, I know it's similar to US, but Canada has been bonkers.
Yeah, it has. So perspective, down 15% is not the end of the world considering where you started a couple of years before that. So, but it also requires a much larger down payment to get in, et cetera. So let's bring it down to my level one more time. And you talked about testing it. I want to get in. Where do I start? You said start with YouTube, but what's accessible to the average individual who is going to work 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day and can't sit and watch the ticker?
Great question. So thankfully there's lots of platforms now where they allow you to test and to run strategies, and they're streamlined. Like they're very easy to use. A lot of them are free to use. It just, you know, the platform I use, for example, is NinjaTrader, but there's a lot of really popular platforms that make it easy to test and build automated trading systems. NinjaTrader, TradeStation, QuantConnect are like the big top three, and they're just streamlined platforms that you can download, you can set up, and you can start testing right away. And they give you all the tools you need to get started building automated trading systems. And a lot of them, you don't even have to write code now. In fact, one of the platforms or kind of apps that I built was a tool that allows you to test and build strategies without writing any code. It's just an interface, right? You just click, okay, buy this when this does this. Okay, perfect, run. And it's that simple. So a lot of these platforms have helped that. And I would recommend, you know, downloading the platforms, reading their documentation, reading their YouTube videos. And in a month, you could have your own trading system because of these platforms. You know, 10, 20 years ago, when you had to build it from scratch or when you were working for a fund and it was all proprietary, that was tough. Like that, you know, from scratch, you're going to have to build connections to the broker and back testing and all that sort of stuff. But now everything's streamlined and a lot of the platforms make it super, super easy.
Let me challenge you just a little bit more though, because I mean, I'm a pretty handy guy. I read... I actually might be in the minority, but I'm not afraid of an instruction manual when it comes with the IKEA furniture assembly. You know, okay. I've tried putting it together without the instructions and I learned that the hard way. It just doesn't work. but you know, I can change my own brakes on my car if I really wanted to, because I can order the parts and I can YouTube it, and I've got tools and I've got bloody knuckles to show it. And I've bought thousands and thousands of dollars worth of tools. I've also gone to Home Depot and attempted to do my own plumbing and my own deck building and my own things like that. And yeah, I can DIY. I can. It's possible. I also know that if I drop my car off to the mechanic, it'll get done faster. Yes, I'm going to pay for it. I'm paying a premium, probably 200%. But I also get to hold somebody accountable, and they've got a certification beside their name, and my kids are in the car, and it's not worth my ego. I've done plumbing that doesn't flush or vent properly, and it's not fun. So I got to call a plumber later as well, because I thought I knew what I was doing. So at what point, even though you're telling me I could go online, I could YouTube it, I could go and get this app, I could figure it out myself. Mm-hmm. At what point is it worth paying somebody to do it? Somebody like yourself who's done the math and done the work and done the testing and done the homework. Why wouldn't I want to pay you a premium, or why would I want to save myself from paying you a premium given your expertise, and I still get to go to work my 8 hours a day and do what I'm paid to do?
Yeah. So really good question. So I think there's two scenarios where you wouldn't want to do it yourself. Number one is if you have obviously an immense amount of capital and you have other income coming in, it's major income, where it's not worth your time. The opportunity cost of doing it yourself is not worth it, and be an easier way to, or it'd be more worth your time to maybe pay someone else to do it or work with another trading firm. That would be the first reason. Number two is if you're not passionate about it, if you don't care about building your own, manifesting your own kind of portfolio, or, you know, you're not really passionate about trading signals or creative ways to make trades or investments. You just, you know, you want to make more money with your money in your checking account, but you're not willing to, you know, you're just not passionate about the trading space. That would be another reason to, you know, pay someone else to essentially do that.
Let's be honest. I want green grass on my front lawn, but I don't want to do the landscaping or the lawn maintenance.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not interested in that. It's not worth your time. You have other priorities at the moment. It's just not worth it. So that would be that would be the main reason.
So what's happening out there though, in the marketplace? You're at an interesting generation, I think yourself, where you know what the historical sort of trends have been. And then you see the, I don't even think it's fair to call them millennials anymore, but you see the younger generations and the up and coming generations. Are you seeing trends in terms of level of interest and level of involvement of people getting in or not getting into this space?
I'm seeing a lot of increased interest in this space. I do have an online course and a community of algorithmic traders, and the amount of like 18, 19 year olds or people, you know, emailing me and saying, "Oh, I'm in college. Should I, you know, study this major to get into, I want to work for a hedge fund, or, you know, I want to be in the quantitative trading and developer space." I'm seeing it a lot. It's getting much more popular. I think as computer science is also increasing in popularity, it's bringing in that bridge of quantitative finance, right? Which is truly that niche, right? You don't want to just get into computer science in a general perspective. You want to find a niche, and quantitative developing and trading is one of those niches that's very lucrative. It's a very rewarding career, right? If you can make a fund or a firm quite a bit of money, you're going to make some money too, right? So a lot of funds and firms are willing to pay top dollar to hire these quantitative traders and developers. And I'm seeing it with the younger generation a lot. So it's really good to see, and it gives me purpose as well.
So you went to college and you studied this as you studied computer science as a major, but you still had to go and, once you were done, do your own exploration and self-teaching, learning, et cetera, et cetera. Is correct. That still the case? Is it still the people that you're providing now the education that wasn't provided to you, but these 18, 19 and 20 year olds, for example, and I'm sure that there are those in their 30s, 40s and 50s who are doing it as well, but the trend that you're seeing is what you've just described. Is it still pretty much a self-study aside from now what you're bringing to the market and offering people, or is this something that you can learn in college?
I believe it's still a self-study. I think the programs in college are, you know, usually you'd have to take like a minor in finance or maybe a major in computer science. So that would be not a self-study. You could learn it through there, but a lot of people that I talk to are not doing that. They're just taking the computer science route. So when you do that, it can be a big self-study. Fortunately, with the internet and the amount of online courses and even online university courses, there's, you know, a lot of, you know, opportunities to get into the finance after the computer science. But yeah, I would say for the most part, it's a self-study, because it's hard to learn both at the same time, right? There's vastly different concepts. You know, computer science is technical, logistical, making sure things work, doing it correctly, where the finance aspect, it's not as technical. It's more creative. It's more, you know, how can you build good portfolios, reduce your volatility, find, you know, uncorrelated returns. It's a little bit different. So it's hard to learn them at the same time. And you kind of have to do one before the other. And maybe you could do finance before computer science, which might be the better route, because the finance, the trading knowledge is a little bit more abstract and a little bit tougher to get good at. It takes a longer time to get good at.
Well, there's definitely a philosophy, and I subscribe to it, that says if you're horrible with $1, you're going to be equally horrible with $1 million. It's just going to be magnified, right? Your problems are going to be magnified. Yeah. You got into this, though, because of your, you stated because of your recognition or awareness of a lack of transparency out there in the industry in general. And that's not calling people bad people. It's a lack of transparency. Call it what it is, right? And you can take any inferences that you want from that. So out there, though, in the marketplace, there's been no shortage of sign up for my three easy payments of whatever program and you'll be a millionaire overnight, you know?
Yeah.
We know that that's few and far between. Has it happened? Sure. Read the asterisks, the fine print, just like it says in the car dealership, only one vehicle being offered at that price with those features, et cetera. But for the average person, intelligent, willing to do the work, et cetera, but doesn't have the knowledge or doesn't have the skill set or the knowledge base, creating that transparency, creating the content for this space is great, but at the end of the day, the fundamental principles of personal finance or finance in general must still apply, regardless of the fancy algorithm, regardless of the flashy marketing campaign that's being, you know, sold to you to subscribe and jump in. So in terms of somebody looking at dipping their toe or is well capitalized but wants to make a move, wants to try something new, you yourself started small, but And I'm not asking you to provide financial advice today. Well, give me a case study or a best practice that you're seeing out there that just makes sense on how to get into this space.
So when I got started, I'd say the best way to get started is there's a couple things. So you don't have to be capitalized. You don't need money because you can trade in a simulation or a paper environment. And I recommend that. So that's the number one method. I would, you know, build trading systems in a simulated environment, probably for the first 6 months to a year. Because when I first started, I lost a lot of money. I lost a lot of my savings doing that. So I think making sure you're testing with low amount of risk as possible, you need to lower your personal risk. And to do that, you need to trade with a simulated environment, which is basically like fake money. So you're running your trading systems, but with fake money. So that way you're not risking your own capital. And you're learning what it's like to trade, the volatility every day, you know, being up 1%, down 1%, that sort of stuff. It's going to teach you it's going to make you rock solid and kind of, you know, humble you a lot. So I would definitely recommend trading in a simulated or paper environment for 6 months to a year. And then with that being said, to be successful in this space, you do need to be pretty well capitalized. And for most people that are watching that probably have a 9-to-5 job, but want to get into this quantitative trading space, you're going to have to set aside some of your own personal money to make this come true, right? And it needs to be enough where it's not affecting your lifestyle. It's not, if you were to lose it all, it doesn't affect you. You know, it might make you a little bit sad, of course, but it doesn't affect your lifestyle. So whatever that number is for that person, that's kind of what you need to allocate. And then if you want to dominate, if you really want to make this a career and do very, very well, absolutely, you're going to have to raise outside capital because, you know, the law of big numbers, you know, if you want to make, you know, X percent return on $1,000, well, it's not going to pay for your lifestyle or be a career, but if you can get more money, it can be. And that's sort of the last step is, you know, raising outside capital, which will make you dominate. With that being said, you don't have to do that. I know plenty of people that use their own capital and do okay for themselves and have a lifestyle that they want. Obviously you'll have to have a higher income, higher paying job or business, but that's, you know, that's sort of the last step as well.
Building a good trading system is something that you've prided yourself on. How would you describe what makes your system a good trading system?
Good question. So I have a process for building great trading systems. It's a six step process, and all of these steps factor in what it takes to build a good trading system. So what it comes down to is your trading system needs to be robust, right? We all know the public markets are pretty wild, right? Sometimes there's lots of volatility, there's news, things are going on, prices going everywhere. Sometimes it's less volatility, things aren't moving anywhere, it's, you know, really choppy. Your trading system needs to be able to either do well in both scenarios or do really well in one and kind of minimize in the other. And with my process, my six-step process, I've been able to find a way to build robust trading systems and portfolios to be able to handle those both scenarios of high volatility, lots of price movement, things are going up crazy or down crazy, and also the other environment where it's, you know, really low volatile, you know, prices aren't moving that much, and I'm able to kind of sustain and not, you know, not blow up, if you will. So this process involves, you know, testing in different scenarios, being really granular with my testing, you know, factoring in basic stuff like commissions. Like, for example, when you trade in most markets, you have to pay a commission. You know, it could be $1 or $2 per trade. So when I'm testing, I'm making sure I'm including that in my testing so it's more realistic. So that's one part of my process. Another part is any new trading system that I launch, I implement, I put it in a simulation environment for 30 days for 1 month. So say I have a new trading system, right? And you know, you're all giddy, you're excited to launch it live and hope that you know, makes money. Well, before I even launch it live with real money, I'm actually putting it in a simulated environment for 30 days. And it actually has to make money in those 30 days before I launch it live. Cause I want to make sure it's working in the current market environment. Not if it was money, I don't want to run it live, right? Why would I do that? It's very easy to lose money in this space. I want to maximize my chances of making money and being confident. So that's another part of my process as well. It's kind of these steps to, you know, that I've learned over the years where I found good trading systems.
You're reminding me of sort of the pharmaceutical industry's guidelines around testing in a controlled environment and before releasing it. Obviously, we want the cure for all of the ailments out there. We've seen some variation on that, certainly in the last few years around vaccine status for the COVID epidemic, et cetera. But ideally, you're contained and you're testing things out. Keep going. Just before you do that, actually, though, I just want to make sure I'm clear. I'm hearing, if I'm hearing properly, and I've also, you know, watched some of your videos, you're talking about 1 degree variances here and there, right? So you're looking at the most granular and sensitive, or you're looking for sensitivity adjustments. This is sounding to me, and I guess I'll form this put this to you in a form of a question. Humans tend to be pretty emotional characters.
Yes.
And I'm not hearing a heck of a lot of emotion in this. So how do you train yourself to disregard the bias that we as humans often walk into a scenario with?
Great question. So I do want to preface this with, you know, automated trading or quantitative trading removes emotion, right? There's no emotion because the computer is doing the work for you. That is definitely not true. That's farthest from the truth, because when your money's on the line, you're emotional. Like, let's be honest. Anytime your money's on the line with any venture, there's emotion with that because it's your money. You worked hard for it. So it does not remove emotion at all when it comes to actually trading. Now, with that being said, going back to removing bias from your strategy. So maybe you tested and built a strategy, coded one up. You're super excited. You have all this bias that this strategy is going to be the best, right? And nobody else can stop you. And this is going to make you lots of money. Well, a lot of the times your strategies will fail. You'll even run it in the sim account. It'll pass the 30 days and you run it live and it won't make money, or it'll be like really flat. There's a lot of steps to reducing that bias. And the number one step is testing out of sample. So what that means is when you're testing your strategy, you usually have a start and end date, right? So you might test your strategy. I personally like testing my strategy for 2 years. So I'll pick two random years from 2008 until today and test it, right? And when I say test it, the rules that I gave it, the buy and sell rules, right? How much money did it make over those 2 years? You know, how much returns did it make? And once you do that, what happens is you'll get a number, either positive or negative. And if it's negative, you'll probably move on to a new idea. But if it's positive, you're like, I'm on to something. This looks like a good strategy. I want to test this live. The problem is you've only factored in those 2 years and how it did. How did it do in the other 14 years or 16 years that you have access to through your platform? Well, you should probably run that, right? So that's what's called out of sample, is you pick an in sample period, which is the 2 years, which I mentioned, and that's sort of your sandbox. You can, you know, tweak until you have kind of maybe a number that you like, either a profit number that you like or another metric. And then you want to take that, save those settings, right? Like save it in a memory card and then test it with the new data. And that's what removes the bias and makes your strategy robust. Because if it can now make money in that out of sample period in new data, that's a really good sign that you have a decent strategy. Because when you trade live, it's new data, right? Tomorrow, Monday, is new data. It's new trades being made, new news, that sort of stuff. So the more and more you can test for that out of sample new data, the better. And so that's the best way to remove bias. And a lot of my strategies, the in sample will look good the 2 years, and I test out of sample and it sucks, right? So
I want to go, and I want to be mindful of our time here, but I also want to just ask you this question. I mean, if the last couple of years of everybody's existence has taught us anything, it is that this is how it's always been, you know, didn't actually pan out for many people, right? Like the status quo is something that it is possible that you can get a wrench thrown in that plan if you are blindly assuming that things tomorrow will be the same as they were yesterday. Yeah. So for many people, you know, we get into our routines, we get into our patterns, and this is how we condition ourselves to believe the world is. And then all of a sudden, one of the constants actually suddenly becomes a variable. It's no longer a constant. And that one thing changes everything. And that, so there's a difference between, I suppose, I guess if there's a question in here for you, it's the difference between the short and the long play, because mm-hmm. over the last 3 years, volatility was the expectation, change was the reality. But yep. now that we're on the other side of the pandemic, and this may be where finance and economics comes into play in studying that data, not computer coding data, but how does our understanding of the way the world works from an economic perspective mm-hmm. play into this? And maybe there's the education there. But so now that we're sort of on the other side of that 3 year period, how much of back to normal will we see? How much of back to normal will we not see? And how does that factor into the predictions and the constraints that you're providing your formula?
Good question. So I'll start with the last question. I like to, when I test that 2 year in sample data period that I mentioned, usually those 2 years, they'll have different market regimes. So for example, 2019 and 2020. 2020 was super volatile. Both were bullish years, which means the market went up over both times. But 2019, there was no volatility. It was a very slow grind up. 2020 was bonkers, right? We had crazy price movements on the downside, but mostly on the upside. So when you're testing those 2 years, usually it covers multiple market regime changes, which is good. And that's what I like to do. But as far as like going back to normality, we're still seeing quite a bit of volatility now. I can't explain it, maybe because there's more traders and it's becoming more and more accessible, but we're still seeing a lot more volatility now than we are seeing, you know, back in 2017 or 2016, or even 2018, which was a really volatile year. So there's a lot of, I think because there's more traders, there's just a lot more price movement now.
So there's
obviously
more data.
It's still lower than 2022, mm-hmm. but it's still enough volatility to find opportunities to find edge. But it is lower than 2020 or 2022. And you'll have to just have some trading systems in your portfolio that do well in these periods. And usually those trading systems are either mean reversion, where they're going back to the average, or maybe they're like holding a position longer. But I, you know, for the future, it's really hard to tell. I think this year will be a little less volatile than last year. We'll see less price movement, but there's still quite enough to have some decent opportunity.
So, Jacob, that begs me one question. We're hearing from governors of the Bank of Canada, the U.S. Fed, those types of things that people are now, people and companies, because of volatility, because of increased interest rates out there, it's tougher to qualify in terms of making some purchases, both on the personal side as well as the corporate side. Some are sort of preserving capital and holding on to their spending. They're even doing some layoffs in the labor force, et cetera.
Yep.
So as a component of society is being a little bit more protective of maybe away from taking risk, does the fact that maybe those who might have been making plays are being a little bit more protective, does that create different opportunity from those who are willing to go into the market right now?
I see. Yeah, that's a really good question. So as a trader, as a quantitative trader, there's opportunities every single day. It doesn't matter what market I'm in. There's just so much opportunities. As long as the market's open, there's opportunity. So in this industry, you always want to be in the market. You always want to have trading systems going regardless of what's going on with either politics or whatnot, because there's just a lot of edge. There's probably periods of time when you want to reduce your risk, where maybe you want your sizing, you want to trade less size or less strategies. But if we're talking about the trading space, you always want to be in the market because there is just so much opportunity on a day-to-day basis. It also depends on your, thesis and your fund's thesis. For our, fund, our trading systems, they really do well intraday. So we always want to be in the market because there's lots of volatility intraday. But if you're a more longer term view person, or fund or firm, sometimes holding on to cash is better because you want to either ease into your positions or wait for some type of, news item or, fundamental analysis to hit before you enter a position. So it depends on your thesis a lot, but as far as automated trading and intraday trading, you always want to be in the market. There's always tons of opportunity. And if you're ever sitting out, it's giving people more opportunity, I guess, because there's less traders and that means less slippage. So yeah, I'll take it.
Hey, Jacob, I could ask you questions over and over and forever. This is exciting to me. It's interesting. And everything that you said, say, leads me to the next question. I'm interested. I know how to find you on YouTube. How do I find your program, though, that you're offering for people who want to learn and learn from you?
Perfect. Yeah. So my program is called Coding Great Trading Bots. The website is codealgotrading.com, or you can just Google Coding Great Trading Bots. And it's an online course and community of quantitative traders. And we meet also on a weekly basis and we build strategies together and share them with each other. So it's a great space to learn, to get into it. And the course is good for beginners and even up to experts. So that's where you can find it.
Jacob Amaral, WeTradeHQ, WeTradeLabs.com, I believe. Am I correct there?
Correct. Yep.
Awesome. Really love it. I've enjoyed this. I've learned a lot. My brain does hurt just a little bit, but not that much because you made it something that that I could ingest. I love these conversations and I really want to thank you for joining me here on Think Underground and making your information and your knowledge available for people to sort of tap into. So, I wish you the best. I love the fact that you're continuing to test this and improve and grow. But thanks for sharing with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Arv. My pleasure and appreciate the opportunity. I had a blast and hopefully I can come back.
Oh, hopefully, for sure.
Think Underground is a SIVA Creative Incorporated production written and hosted by Arif Khan, produced by Breck Glover, with production assistance by Samantha Bowman, Cody Fitzgerald, William Gibson. Music courtesy 1M1 Music, directed by Arif Khan. Executive producers Mallory Steele and Arif Khan, created by Mallory Steele.